touch me. Light, touch me. Open wide. Let us climb to safety. Julie is a TV set. Julie is a TV set.
Ohama, and a song, as you could probably tell, called Julie is a TV Set. Julie is a TV Set. That's from an album called 13 Electronic Cover Songs. Brand new on our playlist here at CJSF, and hope you enjoyed that. Peter's here to talk about...
This was 1987. It was a conference that would have proposed a massive debt, a third world debt for land swap to be part of a wilderness area. Now, this morning on the on my tablet, I was a bit surprised that the Chicago Tribune newspaper had an article in 1987 on it, because they're, and I checked, they were established 1847. They're the major Chicago newspaper, the seventh largest in the United States. So I didn't know about this, but what they said about it was that at the edge of the Rocky Mountain National Park last week, some of the world's most powerful bankers advanced a bold new strategy for dealing with environmental degradation in the third world. Their plan is to use the immense debts owned by many impoverished countries to pressure them into taking steps to converse their threatened environments. The approach already is being used on a small scale by private U.S. conservationists working in South America. Dubbed a debt for nature swap, the plan calls for outside forces to pay off parts of a targeted country's outstanding debts in exchange for concessions to protect natural regions. The proposal was advanced last week to a largely enthralled audience of diplomats, scientists, and conservationists from 52 countries. Anyway, 52 countries at an eight-day series of presentations there. So, and I was a bit surprised that the Chicago Tribune had an article at the time, because I actually saw... The first time I saw the George Hunt video, because he went there, he was an accountant in the Boulder, Colorado area where the conference was, and he was just a run-of-the-mill accountant, not to put him down. He died he died about 11 years ago.
Yep.
And he sort of was always presenting himself kind of with what happened there.
Mm-hmm.
I heard the audio tape. He has like a 10-minute audio tape. And on this, one of the Rothschilds at the time was talking about for the greenhouse effect, that's what it was called in those days, I guess, call it climate change now. He was proposing, and the thing is that he sort of interviewed, he didn't audio tape the whole conference, but we have the voice of Edmund the Rothschild proposing to convert CO2 over to dry ice and place them on the actual poles. So we would have, I mean, that didn't happen, I guess. They didn't go with that proposal. And they didn't really go with this proposal either. I mean, and George, it's funny, I don't think Alex Jones ever got into this or whatever, really, because this is prior to George Hunt presenting himself, is prior to that happening. One thing you could say, well, he kind of looks silly because it didn't happen, but that a proposal was done at one time sort of makes one think, you know, it's sort of like, Oh, well, this was actually proposed. It's a very dramatic proposal because it would put a lot of the, I think 33% of the land mass of the world in some sort of a UN park. Like we got like national parks in Canada, yeah, the United States, and that was sort of the idea of it. Now, the other aspect to that, if there was a Michael Sweatman of the Royal Bank of Canada was involved, and he, the idea was that the Royal Bank of Canada was going to be a clearinghouse of this, that they were going to clear it financially, but anyway, so it didn't happen. But the other thing is that I saw another thing over the weekend by George Hunt for the 1992 Rio conference, which was you've heard of that over mm-hmm. the years, haven't you?
Yeah.
And he was a bit critical of that.
But why don't you just explain what it was very quickly, the Rio conference?
I think that was the first major one on global warming or mm-hmm. climate change. It was sort of the first kind of push of it, in a way. And George Hunt sort of saw a connection with it, was this, which some people are sort of, you know, like there are people that say, well, I'm very suspicious of the climate change theory. And it sort of connects with this a little bit. Why? Because they sort of feel that it's not quite on the up and up how it was presented, whether we can agree with that or not. But mm-hmm. One of the things that people are sort of very suspicious about that conference here in Canada, or certain people in Canada, is that the daughter of David Suzuki, David Suzuki's daughter, did a presentation. And what some people have said, well, she sort of says, I am part of a committee of young people and we funded ourselves to be here. And what they sort of said, well, obviously we know who really, well, in their eyes, really funded it was her father. I don't know. You know what I mean? It sort of just seems kind of suspicious that you just sort of get to speak like the Greta Thunberg of 32 years ago.
Right.
But anyway, so so I don't know. I mean, it has been over the years. I guess it's, I mean, he sort of just died. He was sort of a one note, I guess, George Hunt, because he was he would always bring up this, and he would always tie it back to that he was. But the other thing about it was that it really, I mean, I'm surprised the Chicago Tribune at the time had it. And in the article was two paragraphs there. And while many at the conference seemed enthralled by the smooth presentations from Sweatman, Rockefeller, and the Rothschilds, others were skeptical and noted it was bankers like them who did so much to cause the very problems they now want to solve. At one session, Dr. Raymond Dusman of the University of California at Santa Cruz told Sweatman, the audience of a several hundred, beware of bankers bearing gifts. So that Chicago Tribune, kind of an establishment yep. Publication.
One of the things I think was interesting in the bit you read from the article at the beginning of our talk, you know, is they made a mention of, you know, outside forces would, you know, pay the money to offset the debt, you know, so, and then, you know, countries would create these parks. But who are these outside forces? Who are these, you know, who's going to be coming up with this money to do this?
Well, that, I mean, it obviously didn't go through, did it?
No, but obviously they must have had somebody in mind to, because it doesn't, you know, when I hear that, it doesn't sound like the banks were willing to necessarily forgive the debt to see this happen. They just wanted somebody to pay the debt, and this is a way to make it palatable
well,
for
yeah.
somebody else to pay the debt.
Oh, here we go. I just went over the plan calls for outside forces to pay off parts of it. Well, anyway, I mean, going over a bit of hearing the audio tape, plus a bit of what he says, because he's coming from a Christian perspective, like this is the end times. They're coming with the mark of the beast.
Oh, no.
Well, I mean, actually, it's such a draconian plan.
Mm-hmm.
You can't quite blame him from thinking about it. You know, I mean, but the thing is, I guess he looks silly because it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But the dry ice thing is a bit much. The other thing is that when you hear the audio tape, if you put George Hunt, World Wilderness Committee, or Congress, World Wilderness Congress, you have like the Rothschild. He says silly stuff like, when we can harness love like we can harness energy, the world will be so happy. I mean, and this is the audio tape of the bit of the Congress, which is very brief.
Yeah.
And it does sound a bit odd, you know. And Strong, the Marie Strong, he died, I guess, 10 years ago or so, Canadian globalist.
Right, and I think he was involved in, negotiating the free trade agreement and...
I don't think so.
He was the main sort of Canadian government sort of representative at these climate conferences, like the big Rio conference that you mentioned earlier and ones that followed on from that.
Yes, so he was... and one thing that George Hunt brings up was that around that area of Colorado, he was, because of land he owned, he was wanting to do some environmental degradation on his behalf because he owned the land.
And right.
He saw that was a bit of hypocrisy. Actually, that's mentioned. CBC television had something called Life and Times. They don't have any more. It started, it says People's Lives.
Right.
And they
profiles
have
of.
Yeah, profiles. And one is on Strong. And one of the odd things I kind of say to people is like, if you want to come something against Marie Strong, look at that, which is tries to make him look good, and he kind of doesn't, because it kind of like it begins with Kofi Annan, who was alive at the time.
He was the Secretary General of the UN.
And he says, I like Marie Strong. I mean, like, have him say it on camera. And Ted Turner says he likes Marie Strong. So it says, this guy is connected in some way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Henry Kissinger met him, but anyway. He did go to Bilderberg's Marie Strong. I know that. There was in 2006... the United Nations Urban Forum, World Urban Forum, but they said they allowed anybody to attend it. And they said all what you have to do was pay your travel expenses and your fees, hotel fees. Well, I lived in Vancouver, so I went to it. And there was something where he was supposed to be at something. Marie Strong was supposed to be there, and I said, I got to go there. Of course, he didn't show up, and it was this thing on how to network.
Yep.
It was done by one of his proteges, you know, one I won't call them quite flunkies or whatever, and it was just about networking, kind of like Amway or something. I don't know. Anyway, so... I guess this is, I really don't know what to make out of it. I think the thing is people think you're being alarmist by bringing it up. Said, well, it didn't happen. But that they were thinking in those ways is sort of, I think, concerning in a way. It's okay, here's something, just a brief paragraph. Among those at the Colorado conference backing the new approach to world ecology were David Rockefeller of the Chase Manhattan Bank and Edmund de Rothschild of the European Banking Empire. So it was a major thing. And the World Wilderness Committee, it's going to have one. It's going to have their conference this year. It's about every 4 years.
Right.
And they're going to have one in the United States at... it's somewhere in the United States. I had it written down the exact place. But they have it every 4 years. And I, if you go to the World Wilderness Committee or the World... They kind of play it down. It's like they never sort of mention, well, we kind of proposed something major at one point.
This organization is different than the World Wildlife Federation?
I think that there is an affiliation, actually. I think
we'll look into that.
I think that there is. But I don't think it's ever done anything quite to the scale of the 1987 conference.
Right.
On their website, they contend there was a 1984 Colorado conference, and they don't mention the 1987 conference, which the Chicago Tribune surprisingly mentioned, which I'm a bit surprised at that, because it's always been like this was the big hidden thing from the people. That's how it was kind of presented by George Hunt and others. Now, here was something else. This was kind of odd. This is from March 14th, 1989. Tokyo is working closely with Treasury Secretary Nicholas Brady on a third world debt plan. Now, I guess this was from the 1989 video of it, and they had like these newspaper things in the background, and they were just showed that. So I guess there was... I don't know if the Japanese still have a... because they sort of went through a bit of an economic bad period.
Yeah.
I don't know if they still have the really good savings rate that they used to have. But I don't know. They this didn't go through. But it was taken seriously. It's sort of like technocracy. It was taken seriously at one time, and then it's not.
Yeah,
so.
And the background to all this is that many third world countries, well, we don't use that term third world really much anymore, but developing countries were loaned quite a lot of money for various sorts of development projects and initiatives, which often didn't pan out, but also left many countries with huge amounts of international debt, which then they had to pay off. You know, they had to service those debts, which means money from the country is leaving the country to repay these debts. It's quite a complicated issue, but it was definitely a big concern for many years. You don't hear about it much anymore these days so much.
Well, George Hunt did make... He did mention Robert McNamara, which I've mentioned. He was director from 68 to 81.
World Bank,
and he was mentioning that, like, one thing that he implemented was this thing about clearing Amazon rainforest for cattle ranching. That was the last thing he signed in 1981 before he left. And George Hunt... makes a point that they're talking about ecology environmentalism when the very institutions were kind of causing.
Yeah, I mean, we're just running out of time, but, you know, turning rainforest into cattle ranches is about as bad an idea from an ecological point of view, you know, on many levels. I mean, both from the fact that, you know, we kind of look to the rainforest as a kind of carbon sink, but also, you know, the environment of those regions. You take out all the trees and you put in pasture land, and with the volume of rain and other things going on, the land doesn't actually stay productive for very long in those areas.
Oh, well, that's
something it's like a short-term, you know, you're going to be able to ranch cattle for a period of time, and then eventually the land is not going to be productive anymore because it doesn't work very well in that environment.
Mm. Well, I take issue with the term developing countries because they're stopped from developing. I know the third world is sort of a bad kind of doesn't.
Yeah. We gotta go here, though. We're going to run out of time with things we got to do
with
still.
With gardening.
Yep.
We're going to garden.
Or we're going to go to Bird Note first. But we'll pick up this issue. We can pick up this issue next week. All right, here we go with Bird Note.
Okay.
Lessons Bird Note. Emily Rabiteau's book, Lessons for Survival, begins with a bird. Well, a painting of a bird.
In New York City, actually in West Harlem, where I teach, and it was a mural of two birds, a pair of burrowing owls. And I found the mural to be really delightful and also kind of surprising in the context of, like, the cityscape.
After the burrowing owls painted on the security gate of a local business, Emily saw another mural and another. She later learned the paintings are a collaboration between artists and the National Audubon Society to highlight bird species at risk of extinction due to climate change. Scattered throughout New York City, Emily decided to seek out all the murals and photograph them.
Because as you know, with street art, it's going to disappear probably. It's not going to be there forever. Grime is going to change it, or it's going to get tagged over by another graffiti artist, or the business is going to change hands, and the bird's going to disappear. So I wanted to document them before they were gone. My project was also, it's about loss. It's about, like, recognizing beauty while it's here in an act of love and devotion and conservation in the same way that people participate in bird counts. Participating in something that's bigger than myself.
You can learn more in Emily Rabiteau's new book, Lessons for Survival, Mothering Against the Apocalypse. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
And now we have our regular segment on gardening with Pablo Vimas.
Hello and welcome to Gardening with Embark. Joining me today is Pablo Vimas.
Hello.
Gardening expert from Embark Sustainability Society. Welcome, Pablo.
Thank you for having me back. Thank you.
Yeah. So we're into June now, and summer's not that far off. And, you know, the weather's pretty decent and things are good. What's happening in the garden?
Well, the last week it has been very, very mixed week. Lots of rain. Yesterday we had sun. Today is sunny as well. With a cold wind we had yesterday. So yeah, the garden is booming. At the moment we continue harvesting all our spring vegetables, all the leafy greens. The broccolis are coming nice. They are making their nice heads. But what we have in the garden is all the chives, the onion chives, nodding onions, peas and fava beans, they are in flower. Some of the peas, the pea bushes, the sugar peas, they are already producing. So we are start harvesting.
So what does that mean when we see that some start to go into flower? What is that telling us?
It's telling us, for instance, for the beans and peas, that is a time to the bounty period arrived because we're interested in the small pea pods. Yeah. To eat fresh from the vine, so that is exciting, and that is the time to visit the pea bush and start finding those snap peas. It's quite exciting because they tend to blend with the foliage, so really you have to be attentive and looking between the plant where they are, and being careful not to destroy the plant itself when you are pulling the pods. With the chives, it's interesting because we have all these nice purple flowers in a pom-pom distribution and lots of bees around. Yeah. And so at the moment as well, it's a good time to pull those flowers from the stem, and you can use those flowers for making vinegar. So you can mix with vinegar and let it rest for a few days, and then you have a nice chive vinaigrette.
Oh, nice. So,
yes, as well. There are some. You can mix those flowers with cream cheese, and then you have cream cheese chives ready to. and the chives attract lots of bees, which these days I've been finding them very drowsy. The bees are just drowsy of the nectar they are sipping from the plants, and they just sitting on the flower Yeah, so if you're into photography, close-up photography, this is the best time to go and get close to the bees because they are sleeping heads.
That's great. Sleepy bees. It actually sounds very peaceful time to spend a bit of an afternoon in the garden if the weather's nice.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's the best time to be in the garden with chives, with peas. The faba beans, the fact that we have flowers at the moment, it really gives us hope that in a month time we can have some faba bean pods, and we can start eating fresh, young faba beans.
Great. So which ones of these are we harvesting now, and which ones are we just tending?
At the moment, we are harvesting the peas and onion chives, and we are tending the faba beans.
Great.
Yeah.
And how long does this sort of harvesting period last for us?
This is a good question. So with the onion chives, once we pull the flowers, we are forcing the plant to make more foliage, so more leaves, mm-hmm. which is great. So we can have more chive leaves. With the peas, the more we harvest starting from the bottom up, the plant feels the need that I need to make more flowers, and so we can extend the season, harvesting more often. Yeah, because we want to harvest the pots with young peas, with young seeds inside. At the moment that the seeds get too big, they're difficult. Yeah, you need to start thinking on cooking. So the more we harvest, the plant is forced to make more flowers.
So it's really actually, it sounds like it's quite important to be on top of this, to notice when the pods, et cetera, are ready and get to them so that they're, as you say, they're like the baby pods and nice and succulent, I guess.
Tender. Sweet.
Tender is perhaps a better word. You know, and if you don't, then they get tougher and not as flavorful?
Yes, very tough and not so flavorful as the young pods. Yeah, so again, and my recommendation is visit the garden at least once a week and get close to your plants. Get close to the plants, touch them, see what is in between, what's happening with the peas. And that's very much hands-on. It's quite exciting. The flowers of peas are closed flowers, so they are not open. You don't see the organs of the flower. Therefore, there are no beekeeping for nectar, so it's very safe to go and get in close contact with the plant.
That's great. Well, it does sound like the most important advice for the gardener is to be in the garden.
To be in the garden, rain or shine. That is, even sometimes when it rains. For instance, the other day I was thinking, it's raining so heavy. But if you visit the garden, it gives you the chance to see how water moves through your garden, where mm-hmm. water pools, where water starts producing erosion. And then it helps us to see, I should be planting perhaps plants that like water in this section, plants that don't like water, put somewhere else. Yeah, so how the water moves through your garden is very important to knowledge.
Great. That sounds wonderful. Thank you for joining us today. I think next week we're talking about, some herbs and lettuce and so many more things coming up that are coming ready.
So at the moment we have our lavender bushes with nice blooms. The flower buds are just showing. So hopefully for next week we can talk about that and as well all our herbs that are coming up.
Great. Thank you so much, Pablo. Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability Society. Tell me how to find out more about Embark.
Yeah, sure. Embark Sustainability, a nonprofit organization based in SFU Bonavie campus. And you can find our work through our website, embarksustainability.org, or through our social media channels, Facebook, Instagram, at Embark Sustain.
Great. Thanks so much, Pablo.